fire and brimstone. How hot is the political temperature as the dole breaks for midterm? Hubble, bubble, toil and trouble. Who's happy and who's haunted after a fractious 6 weeks? And trick or treat, which parties will get rewarded at the polls? We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. So there's been alleged leaking, great plans, phantom roads, tittle-tattle, socially distanced queuing and many toys thrown out of any number of prams. And yes, it's fair to say that it's been a testy and testing period in politics. This evening, I'm joined by a panel of political scientists and one former politician to give us a midterm report on the TDs and ministers of Dáil Éireann as they head into their midterm break. Joining us in studio tonight, we have Dr. Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, Dr. Teresa Reedy, political scientist at University College Cork, Dr. Kevin Cunningham, lecturer in politics at TU Dublin and statistician with Ireland Thinks, and Kate O'Connell, pharmacist and former Fine Gael TD. We want to hear from you as well, so do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_rte. Now, we have an intimidatingly impressive quantity of political brain power in the studio and on the panel tonight. So let's not waste a moment and get stuck straight in. Dr. Cunningham, perhaps you might set the ball rolling for us and just set the scene as to where we're all at with polling. And there's been a kind of a raft of polls there since we've came back in September. Where are all the parties at?
Well, I mean, if you were to kind of give a general average, and this is vaguely off the top of my head, that Sinn Féin are up in the early 30s, and they've been persistent around that mark even since the start of the pandemic. Fine Gael started off relatively well in this term, and partly as a result of the pandemic, there was a bit of a kind of a leap, basically, in support for a lot of governments, but more so for the Irish government in that period of time. And then since then, the party has actually steadily declined, and there's a little bit of difference between different polls, but you have to average them out. They're down around 23, perhaps. Fianna Fáil declined in the context of the pandemic and have seemed to somewhat miraculously recover a little bit. A lot of kind of predictions, my own, in fact, as well, around the potential of polarisation of Irish politics around Sinn Féin and Fine Gael hasn't transpired in that Fianna Fáil.
Despite their great efforts.
Yeah, despite the great efforts, in fact, of the two parties themselves, but hasn't quite transpired. And that kind of fear hasn't really happened. So you have Fianna Fáil recovering a little bit. As for the smaller parties, Labour has bobbed around basically in the same position, had a little bit of a bounce after the by-election victory. The Green Party is a little bit lower than where it had at the last general election, a little bit of a bounce after the budget, but apart from that, not much change. And Social Democrats and everything else, as you were, really.
I'll bring in Teresa Reedy. Teresa, and just for the benefit of listeners not watching us on News Now, we should point out that you're joining us from our Cork studio. Teresa, you're very welcome.
Good evening, everybody.
Just that point there that Kevin was making about the impact of the pandemic on our politics here. There was this sense at the start, and I think Kevin, you've described it in this studio before, as the rallying around the flag. When, you know, at times of great emergency, you know, governments tend to get that rallying effect. But that hasn't stuck with Fine Gael, at least.
No, I think Fine Gael in particular have seen their poll numbers decline. I think the pandemic kind of generated a kind of suspended reality in politics, if we think about it. There's the whole crisis enveloping the state, but there was a particular dynamic in politics where all of the political parties essentially kind of came together, and there was a lot of support for the measures that the government was bringing in, and that usual kind of argy-bargy and discussion of the detail of policy was put on hold for a period of time. The last couple of months, we've been coming out of that, and there's much more kind of contested debate about all of the policies. There's much more return of normal politicking to the world. And then, of course, Fine Gael had kind of the self-imposed or self-inflicted controversies around the Zappone appointments all through the summer. And that was just a controversy that never really, it always felt like there was something more to come, but it never really kind of morphed into anything. But it just seemed to drag on and on and on. And it meant that there was a kind of a continuing cloud around Fine Gael. And the polls, such as they are right now, we're a long way from an election, but they are suggesting that they have had, or Fine Gael has seen their polling support kind of drag off. I think they probably also have some of the less prominent portfolios, and there's something to be said for that as well. And cumulatively, when you take that, they've gone from kind of being in the high 30s to potentially losing almost 10 points over the last 18 months.
Yeah, Kate O'Connell, are you freed from the tyranny of having to watch every poll as they land?
Yes, freed from a lot of it. And I don't spend my days listening to political shows anymore and catching up. But even, I suppose, to all of us out there, looking at the papers, you see a consistent polling, a drop in performance for Fine Gael. But you also see Sinn Féin's numbers remaining steady, regardless of what the environment is, which, I mean, I suppose for Sinn Féin, they must be delighted, because if this continues, they clearly will be the game changers in the next government, whenever that will be. But for Fine Gael, it's very concerning, as I'm a party member, to see this continuous decline despite all that the performance at the start of the pandemic. Simon Harris as Minister for Health, let's not forget that it was a no confidence motion in him where we ended up in an election process at that time. And then all that good seemed to have been forgotten. So Fine Gael seemed to have a problem, to my mind, in capitalising on perhaps good they have done. I mean, that's easy, obviously, for me to say as a member, and obviously I'm biased, but it's also reflective of the work that happened in Brexit, and Fine Gael perhaps not rewarded for it in the polls, and also in the economic recovery after the crash. So Fine Gael constantly don't seem to get the reward in the polls for work they've done while in government.
Sounds like you're blaming the people.
No, I'm not blaming the people, because it's, I suppose you can understand how the people feel, because the same problems still exist. And when you have been in government for a number of decades and have morphed into both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil now coalescing together, and also that identity crisis that's there between the two of them, where they've morphed into almost the one thing, but there's still the same problems of housing and health in particular have been amplified over this COVID period. And I, for once, think the stark differences and the stark inequalities in our health service and in our housing has come to the fore in the last 2 years more than ever before.
Because
of COVID.
Okay, let's talk about Fianna Fáil for a minute then, Gary Murphy. They're about to launch, of course, this commission to find itself. So, you know, what does Fianna Fáil stand for? What will they find when they go looking, do you think?
Well, I don't think they have a De Valera who can look into his own heart and find the magic solutions to their woes. But Kevin is right in relation to their sort of comeback. I mean, the polls are interesting because we're not terribly far removed from February 2020 on these numbers. Fine Gael are at 23 and they got 22.5.
Now, there is a wild divergence between some of those polls. Some of them make no sense to me at all when compared to the, you know.
And Fianna Fáil were, you know, at 21.5 or 22 at the election and then dropped into 13, I saw in one poll. And now the last poll, I think, had them at 20. What will Fianna Fáil find? I mean, they will find that their core has dissipated over the years, and that core was rural Ireland. It was the people who entered in the middle of the day, so to speak, the famous Mark Killilea phrase. On the centre-right, their clothes have been taken by Fine Gael, but the centre-right vote is shrinking, as we saw with Fine Gael. And on their soft nationalist green clothes, Sinn Féin have clearly taken that those clothes from them. And Fianna Fáil do have a sort of, I wouldn't quite call it an existential crisis, but there are questions about what the party stands for. Now, there is hope. Last night I gave a talk to a very small group of Ogre Fianna Fáil people in DCU.
Do they have you in giving them talks?
They do. I mean, but all sorts of parties. I've spoken to Sinn Féin and Labour, and you know, I'm agnostic in these matters. I speak to anybody who asks me.
Even the late debate.
But I'm regular here, as you know, Katie. I'm happy to be here. But the point is, I think, for Fianna Fáil is that it has difficulties in defining what it stands for. Teresa's very right in the point about Fine Gael not having high public portfolios, but Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin deliberately chose, as far as I can tell, housing and health,
which was seen as quite a risky strategy.
But in one way, it's the future for them. If they can put a big dent in, and I'm not sure the budget didn't worry much for them here. And the radical solutions are needed, because if, I mean, 26% of the exit poll said health, 25% said housing. I mean, local issues are not important anymore in general elections. And if a dent can be put in housing and in health, Sláinte Care, Housing for All, these are the two big things that the government is betting on. Well, in Fianna Fáil, I think has a significant chance of doing reasonably well in the next election. Remember, most pundits, not me, but most pundits were predicting around 50 seats for them, 50 plus. I heard one or two people saying, and they ended up with 38. In a terrible general election, really. So I wouldn't be writing them off. But the big fear, of course, for all the government parties, as Kate said, is that the Sinn Féin vote at 23% in the general election has risen to 30 and is not moving. And there's clearly a large cohort of people who think that Fine Gael have been in power for too long, and that the centrist parties of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have also been in power. They've been in power since the foundation of the state, and that it's probably time for someone else.
And change, yeah. That's obviously what Sinn Féin campaigned in the last election on, and I don't see any reason why they wouldn't campaign it for the next election.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if you were to look at the numbers today, you would think that Sinn Féin should go through to the next election and retain that support. I don't know if Sinn Féin support is as strong as people might otherwise think. I think there's a lot of vulnerabilities in their support. You look at the leadership ratings and Mary Lou isn't significantly higher than Sinn Féin. You ask people, why do they vote for Sinn Féin in open-ended question surveys? They generally say it's because they want to vote against Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. It's generally kind of an anti those two parties rather than anything else. And then if you look at the constituent parts of Sinn Féin, there's two very different type of voter there voting for them. There's a voter that is otherwise voting for a sort of populist right political party if you were to place them in another political system. And then there's a voter which is slightly larger group of the Sinn Féin voter, which is basically a populist left and very distinctively left-wing voter. And I sometimes wonder at some point, like that, you know,
can you keep those two sides happy?
Well, at some point, that one side is going to collapse like that Las Palmas volcano that's at some point going to fall into the sea and then cause these ripples out throughout the political system.
I mean, I think the softest in the Sinn Féin vote is encapsulated in their 2019 local and European election results.
Yeah, that was never fully explained, really, was it?
Well, it hasn't been fully explained. I tried to do it in the How Ireland Voted book recently that Kevin and myself and others or Teresa are involved in. How Ireland Voted 2020, the sort of definitive guide to that election. And I was on a show with Owen O'Brien, who I thought explained it quite well. A lot of work on the ground, and not just in mid-Dublin, but across the country. But it didn't quite, and dissatisfaction with the government. But campaigns matter now much more than they ever did before. Mary Lou MacDonald had a very good campaign, and by contrast, Leo Varadkar a terrible campaign, and Micheál Martin not much better. The RIC controversy got the government off to a bad start, particularly the Fine Gael part of it. Well, it was the Fine Gael minority government, excuse me, but Fianna Fáil didn't do as well as they thought because that sort of, what you might call, green vote went to Sinn Féin. But there is a... Irish politics now is very fluid, I think, and both the 2020 election, the local elections of 9 months previously, and everything we've seen in the interim would suggest that that remains the case.
If I can go back to you, Teresa, you think Sinn Féin have played a good, shrewd pandemic politics?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think Sinn Féin, they're very interesting political party at the moment. They're very vigorous and talented in opposition, and through the pandemic they've kind of mixed support for the government at kind of crucial critical crisis moments, but with fairly persistent criticism around poor performance of the health system, the fact that there hasn't been a huge amount of progress made in expanding capacity in the health system, so keeping the pressure on but not really getting at the kind of core thrust of kind of pandemic policy. And I think that's been quite effective. But I think in the preceding Dáil term, Sinn Féin were pretty clear in identifying housing very early as a crucial policy for a very wide swathe of the electorate at a time when I think Fine Gael confused what was happening with homelessness and kind of thought homelessness was the crucial issue. But housing had become an acute, massive issue for a huge percentage of the electorate. And Sinn Féin saw that and they were already on it. And I think it's interesting to see at the moment Ireland, how they're really starting to do a lot of work on cost of living. And potentially the inflation increases, we haven't fully noticed them yet, but they're going to crystallise in the next 2 to 3 months, especially as heating bills start to come in. And Sinn Féin have already started to target this as a stick with which to beat the government. And I think that, that kind of shows that they are they're very organised, they're doing a lot of research. That being said, though, I mean, there are dangers ahead. No political party wants to be 10 points in the lead 3.5 years from an election. There's no reason to believe there's going to be an election for a very long time. And Sinn Féin is going to come under kind of attack, a political attack, if you want, from all sides now, because an advancing Sinn Féin poses real danger to a lot of the smaller political parties on the left that are with them in opposition. So ostensibly they look like they're their allies, but I mean the reality is if Sinn Féin continues to poll in the early 30s and goes into an election at that level, it's going to take out a whole swathe of the kind of left-wing seats and the colleagues that are sitting on either side of them in the Dáil at the moment. And to go back to how Ireland voted, there's analysis in there that says Sinn Féin could have taken up to 10 additional seats if they'd had more candidates in the race. Sinn Féin won't make that mistake a second time, and there are certainly very vulnerable seats on the left. They probably will take some Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael seats as well, but I think there's reason why parties on the left will increasingly be concerned about an advancing Sinn Féin and may take a kind of stronger line of attack against them, as well as the government batting back, of course, all the time as well. So being in the lead 3.5 years out might seem like a nice place to be, but it could get much more bumpy as we get closer and closer to the election.
Talk about the identity of Fine Gael for a moment for me, Kate O'Connell, please. Because we would have said clear identity. You know, they're centre right, mm-hmm. you would say, and have, you know, that very clear idea. But what the kind of messages and messaging that's coming from Leo Varadkar in the last couple of months in particular is sort of it's very much the, you know, he's talking about the same kind of things you would have expected from People Before Profit in the last government.
Yeah, I think some of his commentary earlier in the month put many of us in the business area in a state of shock. It didn't seem like Fine Gael would have, to my mind, prided itself in being a party of small business. And when you hear like inflationary changes like, you know, cost of or the minimum wage increase and commitments like that and costs to business that have already been through huge costs in the last 2 years, it doesn't seem very pro-business. But I think Fine Gael have to look at, is there anybody that voted for Sinn Féin in the last election that aren't going to vote for them in the next election? And I think the reality is at the minute that there probably isn't anybody in that category. So
they haven't lost anyone.
They haven't lost anyone. And the only way they can go is to build forward. And if you look at, as you just mentioned there, but as Teresa mentioned there, but the cost of living being addressed. I mean, the cost of energy, the cost of insurance and the cost of mortgages to the people who are looking for housing. And we were like up there with the highest in Europe. And that's going to come home to roost now this winter, already on the back of people suffering as a result of the pandemic. And that shows to me that Sinn Féin are broadening out of the base where they got their vote in the last election and looking into more sort of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil hunting ground, as it were. And they're looking to, I suppose, maybe clean up some of the anomalies, such as, you know, maybe their view on property tax and stuff, which wouldn't really align with, I suppose, you know, the sort of voter that you would expect or the policy that Sinn Féin would pursue, being a party of the left or calling themselves a party of the left. So I think they are tapping into the gene pool of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And I think Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil voters traditionally, their children are probably not voting for the parties that their parents voted for in the past. And that is really the problem for Fine Gael and how they're going to carve out an identity that gets the voters they had in the past back, or the type of voter, like the business person, the farmers in particular, have grave difficulty with being in government with the Greens.
Yeah, well, there you see, doesn't that lay a line now to what you said there a moment ago, that they won't have lost anyone since the last election, because perhaps the climate action policies, the cap policy, all of that might cost Fine Gael.
It might cost Fine Gael.
It
depends on how it's handled. And I don't think anyone is denying the huge risks to the environment at the minute. But once everything is scientifically based, any changes to our farming practices, because we do have very efficient production of dairy in Ireland, and when you hear sort of pushback against that, you go, we have to eat, we have to provide sustainable, safe food. And through the start of the pandemic, we were one of the countries that, you know, we had no food shortages. We survived where other countries struggled at the start of the pandemic. So the farmers will want Fine Gael to stand up for them as they have in the past, and it'll probably become increasingly difficult while in government with the Green Party.
Yeah, let's talk about the Greens for a moment, Gary. How are they coming out of this?
Well, could I just say one thing about Sinn Féin first, which is that rural Ireland is not against Sinn Féin, as far as I can tell. I mean, they have seats in all constituencies bar three. They won seats all up the West Coast in the Midlands. So the evidence would suggest that rural Ireland, so-called, now I know rural Ireland is not just farmers, is willing to vote for Sinn Féin. And on the 10 seats, it's a little bit like reading history backwards. I mean, Mary Lou MacDonald should probably
have ran a candidate.
But, you know, the risk of running a second candidate in places like Cork North Central.
So we saw what happened in Donegal in the previous election.
No, the Greens, I mean, they're in government and that's where they have to stay. And, you know, to have the carbon tax is proof of the correct, one might say, you know, if you want things done, government is the place to be, not opposition. I mean, and there is a grave danger for parties who don't go into government when they have the chance. The Social Democrats and Labour might have to live with this problem at the next general election when they both refuse basically to do any sort of serious negotiating about informing the last government. And I also spoke to the Greens, by the way, at something a year or so ago, and made the point that, you know, notwithstanding the divisions within the party during the leadership election between Eamon Ryan and Catherine Martin and the decision to go into government or not, now that both those decisions have been made, I think the Greens have to, you know, go full steam ahead, because if there's any sort of wavering, I'm not sure the electorate will be would be in favour of that.
But do you think their supporters are basically go with the line, and it seems to be a tactic from Eamon Ryan that, look, we will weather a lot, we will wear a lot, as long as we can get our very narrow but very key agenda.
I do, and I think that's the reason why Eamon Ryan was very keen to get into government. He had learned very difficult lessons of the 2007-11 election, you know, which all but wiped the party out, and in many ways it did very well to come back from that catastrophe, and it was a catastrophe. We lost all their seats, remember, and in that context I think being in government made perfect sense for the Greens. And the key, of course, is can they show their voters, the 7% who were with them in 2020, and get more, that a Greens in government can get things done. Now, there are huge battles ahead with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil about roads. We saw James O'Connor last week, the youngest TD in the Dáil, and Fianna Fáil basically threatened to walk away. So there are grave... The coalition, I agree with Teresa, there's no chance of an election, but the tensions within the government will probably exacerbate as the government continues.
Talk to me just very before we move on to party leaders about the other parties, the Social Democrats, Labour, People for Profit and Independents indeed.
Yeah, I mean, the Social Democrats, I think, is quite an interesting party. I have this strong theory that electoral politics is kind of changing a little bit, in that coming up to an election, there's a great propensity for people to suddenly make their mind out as soon as the election is called. When you look at how Sinn Féin, the exact point in which Sinn Féin rose, it seemed to happen not at the RIC, to my mind, not due to the debates, but actually it happened when the election itself was called. And I think that's something happens when people start thinking about who they're actually going to vote for, when there's actually an election happening, as opposed to prior to that. Happened with the SPD in Germany, happened with Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party in 2017, the Canadian elections recently. There's a number of different times when all of a sudden the election's called, and I can see
there's a flip.
And I think that happened with Sinn Féin very specifically. And I think if there was, and this is obviously anything can happen, because the SPD in Germany is the least likely of every single party to have risen at that point in time. If there was a party that's actually relatively well positioned, it's probably the Social Democrats, because there's a huge overlap between the Social Democrat, that chunk, and that chunk of Sinn Féin voter that isn't actually well aligned. And I think that's one of the interesting things. If there was another election, what might actually potentially happen? The Labour Party is hobbled, as I mentioned before, from its legacy of the previous, of the 2011-2016 government. That doesn't seem to be going away to great
degree. Every little hurts.
Yeah, that particular cycle. And I think it will probably take a significant period of time. You know, there's a change of leadership, but the party has always had the same leaders who were connected with that period. You've seen, I mean, the SPD is a good example. They were a minor coalition partner. They were part of the whole same deal, and they are starting to recover. In France, similarly, parties that were involved with that particular period are now recovering a little bit. So there's a little bit there. People for profit are just, they're always going to get the same. They seem to be more of a party for whom, even though they're not a candidate-based party, like if you were to, before the last election, I asked people who, could they name the candidate that they were going to vote for, as well as the party that they're voting for. And some parties, like the Green voters, couldn't name the candidate in their local constituency. Not one of the respondents could actually name. Fianna Fáil was completely the other end. Fianna Fáil has this real strength in its candidates that suddenly appears, I guess, at election time. But PPP actually is, surprisingly in some ways, like a bit of a puzzle in my own head. Even though they have these very established candidates in very specific constituencies, people don't seem to recognise them when they're saying that they vote for PPP in these polls. So it's a bit of a conundrum of a party, really.
Yeah, we just got a tweet in here. Conditions may now be favourable for the creation of a Progressive Democrats version 2.0 to draw some floating voters away from Sinn Féin. Now, you did say that Sinn Féin does have this populist right.
Yeah. Do I think the PD, like, well...
Another party of...
Yeah,
right.
I think I have slightly different figures in the Ireland Thinks numbers.
Didn't Michael McDougall say this in his Irish Times, in the Irish Times a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, interestingly enough, many years ago, Michael McDougall said that after he didn't get elected, he had this quote where he said, there are some issues such as immigration, if I reminded in the morning to do so, that I know I'd get loads of votes for, but I wouldn't because it would be a particularly nasty enterprise. Across European countries, the Eurobarometer series from last year, 2019, was talking about immigration. Ireland is very, very pro-immigration relative to every other European country. In fact, of all of them, we're the most. So, and that is the
That's thing. The hot button issue
it
for,
is the
for
hot
parties
button
of the right elsewhere. Parties. Yeah,
exactly. So the best predictor.
We had a second party of the right, Renew. Kate O'Connell took Lucinda Creighton's seat in Dublin South East, I can't remember what it was called, in 2016. Before they went a bit mad and Lucinda Creighton left the party, they were offering classic PD policies from the 1980s and 90s. You know, exactly, you know, slash public services. I think Lucinda Creighton would probably take issue with me on that.
Offenders.
But certainly...
No, we have into, of course, now.
Yeah, but this is a slightly different thing. I think Pádraig Tobin would consider himself completely on the left on economic issues. But we had Renew, and Renew collapsed completely. And I'm not convinced there is any space on the centre-right in Irish politics. The evidence doesn't show it, because if Fine Gael are on the centre-right, and we saw what happened to them in the election and subsequently in the polls, well, where's the evidence that a party further to the right economically would flourish? And Irish politics is difficult for new parties, as Kevin and others would know. They come and they go.
Okay.
And the right element is alive and well in some of the mainstream parties. I mean, we saw that with the Eighth Amendment. There was such pushback within Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, it divided the parties. There was people on very much on polar opposite ends of things. So in terms of, I suppose, progressive social policy, there are inconsistencies, deep ones within the existing political parties. You know, it might have been more convenient for many of us if some of them coalesced together and went off about their business. But that's another day's work.
Right. Let's talk party leaders then. Teresa, Taoiseach Micheál Martin, is he doing Cork proud?
Well, I think he's certainly gaining a good bit of prominence in Cork and across the country. And I think over the last 18 months, the last 12 months, certainly, we've certainly seen a reduction in the number of incidents where, he refers to Leo Varadkar as the Taoiseach and other people, confusing the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste. I think he has certainly, as the pandemic has declined and society has opened up, I think our government and the government led by Micheál Martin is more visible. And I think he he's more assured and is more present and obvious in that role. But I think if we look at the government, you know, there are three vulnerable leaders leading the government, and vulnerable rather than weak, because I think what Micheál Martin has shown is that he is capable of taking reasonably decisive action, but he's vulnerable in terms of his position within his own party. He's coming to the end of his term in politics. There's lots of rumblings within the party, and those are against the kind of backdrop of these wider questions about the identity of Fianna Fáil. And then Leo Varadkar is also vulnerable, I think, within his party, less immediately so. But, you know, Leo Varadkar was elected to bring a bit of electoral magic dust to Fine Gael. And they had a dreadful election in 2020. It just went completely under the radar because of the pandemic. But actually, they lost a whole load of seats. And then Leo Varadkar is also under investigation for leaking documents. So there are kind of clouds on the horizon. And I think this is contributing to a kind of a state of instability. Not a dangerous one, I think, and continue like this for quite a period of time. But there's indiscipline in the government. You know, you have ministers and senior backbenchers undermining the government. And if you had stronger leaders in terms of their positions within their parties, they'd kind of stamp down on that. But neither Leo Varadkar nor Micheál Martin seem to be able to wipe out things like Simon Harris just earlier this week came out kind of criticising the delay in the booster vaccines for health staff. Now, he's a minister in the government criticising decisions in, you know, another portfolio in the same government
that
he once held. There's nothing helpful about that. Willie O'Dea came out a week before the budget and said, I think we should give 10 euros to the pensioners, when it was patently obvious that there wasn't going to be a possibility of giving 10 euros on the pension. So, but he created an expectation so that when the government announced there was going to be a 5 euro increase in the pension, it was already less than the expectation that had been created. So it was a loss generated from within the government. So I think that the leaders are not in very assured positions. And I think that's kind of contributing to this kind of indiscipline, or certainly it's creating a context within which this indiscipline can persist.
Yeah. Kate O'Connell, I just see a text in here. Fine Gael are losing the working man because of an arrogant leader. Discuss.
No pressure.
Well, I don't think it's as simple as that. If only it was as simple as that, there'd be an easy enough solution. I do think that
The difference there, though, isn't it, between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar in terms of their positions in the leadership positions, is that there is an obvious. There'd be a number of obvious replacements, I suppose, for Leo, whereas for Micheál Martin, maybe not quite so.
Yeah, there's plenty there in the succession plan for Fine Gael, both men and women with plenty of experience. So I wouldn't have any concerns about the future leadership of Fine Gael. But I think in terms of the indiscipline within the government, that seems to have settled down. Micheál Martin seems to have been able to rise above the Catherine Zappone issue and make it a completely Fine Gael problem, not a government problem.
It was Fianna Fáil that lost a TD over it, mind you.
But it ended up, I suppose, looking worse for Fine Gael. Well, it was obviously mostly at their hand, but he managed to cruise through it, as it were. And he seems to have, in recent months or recent weeks, seems to have really come into his own, and like that, doesn't make the mistake of who's Taoiseach and who's Tánaiste. But in terms of where Fine Gael are, I mean, Leo did come in and ran his leadership campaign based on this is what Ireland wants, and this is the sort of leader that Ireland will want in the future. And there was obviously the Leo leap that was spoken of, this big gain in seats, and that never has materialised. And I'm sure those that supported him are now wondering, will it ever materialise? And I'm sure the membership of the party, obviously a completely distinct group from the population, but they are one questioning why the person that they voted for didn't get the job, and the person they didn't vote for.
Simon Corbyn.
And obviously, the whole point of being a party member is to see your policies come to the fore on the national stage. So that's causing problems within the membership of Fine Gael. Fine Gael have to do something about it and distinguish themselves from Fine Gael and to recover from this, because it's just going downhill since.
What do you mean, do something about it?
Well, in terms of being more defined in their position, I'm not trying to cause a heave here from the list a bit.
I did think we might have had a world exclusive.
No, but in terms of carving out their identity as a party distinct from Fianna Fáil, because, you know, COVID has really put a cloak over everything and sort of halted everything proper debate for the last 2 years. It's been very, very difficult for the opposition to get their teeth into the government because of COVID. COVID has been like a protective shield, but it looked like things were kicking off there in September again. Maybe with COVID, things will pull back a bit. But there will be life after COVID. And it's how people perform and pull out of the current situation and give people something in the years to come to try and make up for what's happened over the last few years. That's going to be the big challenge.
What about, we haven't spoken about Eamon Ryan yet.
And Eamon Ryan, if I could just say about Leo Varadkar first, though. I mean, the problem when you mentioned arrogance.
You see, the thing is about Leo Varadkar is we keep talking about him constantly. People cannot resist Leo Varadkar.
Well, my point was actually going to be about his deputy. It was going to be about Simon Coveney. You could lay the same claim at him. Anyone who listened to his interview with Brian Dobson at the height of the Catherine Zappone controversy couldn't fail to be struck by the enormous arrogance that he showed. And then he talked about when, you know, he looks in the mirror, he doesn't see the people, you know, who like me, who accuse him of this. I thought it was extraordinary. And, you know, he suffers from the same problem that Leo Varadkar would. And, you know, Fine Gael members who, as we know, voted for Coveney over Varadkar in that leadership election of 2017 mightn't see it, but I think floating voters see it. So I think that is a problem for Fine Gael. And it's not just arrogance, it's complacency. 10 years in government, it's a very long time. It'll be another 3 years probably. That's a long time. And while Kate is right about identity, you know, there's just fatigue. And that's why I think being in opposition now gives Sinn Féin these opportunities. Eamon Ryan.
So before you go to Eamon Ryan, Mary Lou MacDonald.
Well, I mean, I would disagree with Kevin in relation to the last general election. I thought the campaign mattered very much. And I thought Mary Lou MacDonald was the undoubted star of that election, forcing RTE to put her on the leader's debate with Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar. Like, the numbers showed in the polls that to leave her out when Sinn Féin were ahead would have been nonsensical. She, as we know, is very able. She's very articulate. And she sells a message. And, you know, and she's able to deflect the difficulties with the, you know, the IRA, for the most part. And I don't think that is an issue for those who now are voting in the Republic. Maybe it will become an issue at the next election. Who knows? And, you know, this particular term hasn't done her any harm. I wasn't convinced of the need to call a no-confidence motion on Simon Coveney. It rallied the government to a certain extent. It was never going to be lost.
Is it the third or fourth one that Sinn Féin have called in the last... Yeah. I'm just wondering how many confidence motions do you have in you without the law of diminishing returns?
No, of course, the Owen Murphy and Simon Harris ones within a couple of months of each other did lead. I mean, I think Fine Gael were very worried.
Well, the Simon Harris one was the one that really precipitated.
I think Fine Gael thought they would lose that. And John McGuinness threatened to vote against and one or two others between December of 2019 and January, February 2020. So Mary Lou MacDonald's had a good time.
But you see here, I have worked for 48 years. I want my pension at 65 and I don't want to pay property tax. Come on, the Shinners. Sinn Féin have been very, very good
at picking
really good issues, and Mary Lou MacDonald has been very good at articulating
they have deflected the issues of how to pay for these, you know, and... I mean, if you're a left-wing party, the idea of not believing in property tax just makes no sense to any of us who, you know, have been studying left-right politics across the world.
But all the left-wingers in our Dáil don't want property tax.
I know, it's like, I've no answer. I mean, it just beggars belief.
Kevin, you have the answers.
Well,
if I can
go back to the leader thing, because the thing is...
I never answered Eamon Ryan question, by the way, Keith.
We have to do Eamon Ryan.
But
very quickly.
There's a recent poll I did, which was, you know, you ask people 0 to 10 how to rate the leaders, and I do this all the time. You can see some of them go up and down quite a lot. The most recent one, Mary Lou was 4.1, Leo was 4, and Micheál was 4. They're pretty much the exact same for parties for whom their support levels are actually quite different. So arguably, Micheál Martin is overperforming relative to his party. Arguably, Mary Lou is actually underperforming relative to the popularity of her own party. She's not unpopular, but she's about as popular as Leo Varadkar. Coming to the Leo question, because Leo is the defining politician, I think, in this period. There's reasons why people are protesting outside Leo Varadkar's private home, for which we did a poll asking people whether they thought that this should be illegal, and the vast majority of the public do think that should be illegal. But But it's because he is the defining character. He is the polarizing figure within the political system. His popularity when he became leader did increase Fine Gael. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. When he became leader, Fine Gael had been behind Fianna Fáil and he lifted them above. He was very popular when Brexit happened. He was then very unpopular in January 2020. 2 months later, he was insanely popular again. Much more popular than any head of state.
Basically, he's a leader with terrible timing.
He declined when he did that thing with Tony Holohan. He said the thing was not thought through in October. And then there's the other thing. But I think his popularity is quite volatile. I don't think you'd ever write him off. And every Fine Gael leader has actually done better in their second election than their first election. So I wouldn't say that he's definitely gone. I mean, there's definitely, as I agree with Kate, there's lots of very popular alternatives. And in fact, for all the leaders, their finance spokesperson is more popular than they are. Now, the housing minister and the health minister are very, very unpopular. But apart from those ministers, it's all the finance spokespersons and leaders that are 5 points more popular than their respective leaders, Piers Doherty and as well, you know.
The Greens then and Eamon Ryan.
Yeah, I mean,
because he was the only one who did actually face a leadership challenge.
He was, and he was lucky enough to come through it. I mean, Catherine Martin gave him a very good run for his money. I think his popularity has to be bunged up with the performance of the government. I mean, Theresa mentioned Willie O'Dea earlier. I mean, I found it extraordinary that about 2 months ago, Willie O'Dea and Eamon Ryan were debating, two members of the same government debating roads in Limerick, basically. That Limerick-Cork road that I've driven too often, it's a terrible road, will become an issue. But, you know, I go back to my point. For Eamon Ryan, staying in government till the bitter end and getting things done and not having the government collapse like the 2011 government collapsed in shambolic terms is the key for the Greens. And I think the Greens have every chance of coming out reasonably well and going to their voters to say, we got carbon tax delivered, we got public transport increased.
They have the advantage of having a very, very clear
agenda. Dark days of 2011, they weren't going away. I mean, the green agenda, you know, climate change and young people, I mean, Kevin will know more about this than me, but on polling, you know, that's a very important element for new voters coming in. Climate change, we see it in universities all the time. This is important stuff, and they have a clear agenda. So, and I think being in government makes perfect sense for the Greens.
And if I could just add in there, just in relation to the Greens, they had a very good budget. If you actually look at where the money went, the average increase was just under 5% for all the ministries. But every one of the Green ministers actually got an increase well in excess of that. Catherine Martin nearly got 9% of an increase. And just to kind of put corollary, they kept the agriculture increase down to 2%. You know, so, you know, it's just about enough to save the blushes of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. But when it comes to the hard numbers, the Greens did very well overall in the budget, and they got some of their schemes in there, the half price public transport. They got more policies for young people than we've seen in the last 15 years in any budget. So I think they, you know, they're doing very well in terms of defining what it is that they stand for. Now, whether they'll be able to keep that up, it, you know, remains to be seen. But so far, they're doing quite well in owning their issues and delivering on them.
OK, I want to just touch very, very briefly on Roisin. Maybe I'll ask you, Roisin and Shortall and Catherine Murphy, as co-leaders. Is that, and I suppose we should mention Alan Kelly as well. First of all, the Social Democrats, are they well served by this dynamic that they have of this co-leadership?
It seems to be stagnating. And while both women are extremely capable and have been very good policymakers over the years, you'd think that the Soc Dems would be coming through as a centre progressive party and like that taking some of that which is now a Sinn Féin vote, pulling a bit from Labour, and then obviously the liberal wing of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. You think they would absorb that, but there's something stopping people from coming in behind them. And their performance in Dublin Bay South wasn't great in the recent by-election. And you would have thought that ground would have been good Sock Dem ground with the diverse population and the demographic that's there. So it doesn't seem to be... They seem to have stagnated as a party, and I think there is potential there. It's just where they go next. They have some really good new TDs came in in the last batch, But like that, it seems to have stagnated. They're going to have to do something a bit like Fine Gael to plough the way through the centre there. And if there is a desire there to do it, they could be very successful if they get their act together, because there seems to be a deficit there in the centre.
You mentioned the by-election, obviously. Ivana Bacic was a big fillip for Labour and for Alan Kelly.
Yeah, fantastic win for Labour, and it'll be very hard to move Ivana Bacic from that seat in the future. There's a strong traditional Labour vote there. Rory Quinn had the seat for years. Across the other side of the constituency, Rory's based in Sandymount. Ivana's from around the corner from where I work, from Ratgar. And she's very much, she lives
we
in
We saw those
Bella,
lovely so pictures of you, or of the two of you in your pharmacy.
Become kind of a thing. You're welcome to come someday, Katie.
I have to. I seem to be the only one that doesn't have a selfie with you in your pharmacy.
The Dublin base, that was a disaster for Fine Gael. Imagine, no Fine Gael TD in the great heartland of Gareth Fitzgerald. I mean, and where is the Leo Bunce there? Notwithstanding
would Kate have won it if she had run?
I think she would have won it quite comfortably, notwithstanding that Ivana Bacic is a very good candidate. I mean, the Liberal vote all came around Ivana. I mean, Fine Gael were probably there for the core Fine Gael vote and nothing else, where I think with Kate's long record of on repeal and others that, I think she would have won quite comfortably, and it's not because she's sitting right here next to me, but it's I think I said it on the day.
She's blushing.
But Ivana Bacic is a very good candidate and will certainly be hard removed.
Okay, I'm going to take a break here, but I do want to touch on a few of the issues that lit up the last number of weeks, and also talk about what might happen if there was an election around the corner.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, very quickly, what we took up our time. As you say, COVID, you know, briefly lifted. Unfortunately, it looks like the fog is coming down on us again. And when that happened, we had the Zappone Gate. We had obviously all the housing issues and all the issues around that. That blew up the row over Sláintecare and the some of the leaders there walking away. And we have the ongoing, obviously, climate issues. Just very quickly, Zappone Gate. Gary, I mean, some people said that was just a beltway controversy and that actually nobody really cared. Manor Street didn't care about that, but it went on for so long. It sucked up so much political energy.
It did, and it manifested a type of arrogance in the government that we discussed previously, and a type of insiders looking after themselves, and that might be a little bit unfair to Catherine Zappone, who has a long, as we know, record on social issues. But it did manifest this idea that insiders were looking after themselves.
But it had all the elements, the posh wine bar, the swanky hotel.
And Simon Coveney, you know, made matters worse, I think, in that interviewed up with Brian Dobson, and then as it dragged on, and then of course when the committee invited Catherine Zappone to appear, and she in her one line said, you know, I respectfully decline, you know, I think that really got at the backs of ordinary people. So I'm not convinced. There is a story come out of government that no one really cares, but I think people do care, because it goes to this narrative that the government is looking after themselves, and really the opposition are, you know, there to, you know, take that role from them.
Yeah, Kevin, have written about this actually, in terms of that Sinn Féin brand of populism, which is all about that we're against the elites, we're for the people versus the elites.
Yeah, it's the one thing that's the best predictor of whether someone is supportive of Sinn Féin or otherwise. When you throw everything at it, it's a perception that there's widespread corruption within politics and all that sort of stuff. It's a perception, obviously, but so whenever those issues, the thing I wasn't surprised about was that Sinn Féin lifted out of the back of that issue. I actually asked people, because I had the same idea about whether people cared or not about this particular thing. And actually, I included a question, do you care or not about this? And lots of people did, actually. So I was surprised about that. But yeah, they do lift every time there's anything to do with corruption. That's when, or perception of whatever it is, you know. The thing is that this is why I think you're talking earlier about the right and centre-right. I think that the real defining thing about that is a very large proportion of the population don't trust any politician. And so when it comes to the Housing for All or the NDP or any of these things, they're not going to have, and they don't have much of an impact, because there's always like, right, well, we've seen these things before and they didn't really happen, so not necessarily going to trust them.
Yeah, Teresa, that is a key problem that Dara O'Brien has, I think, and will continue to have, is that he can come up with all the policies he wants, but there is a difficulty in getting people to accept that they're going to make a difference.
we sometimes talk about kind of an expectations gap in politics. And I think housing is one of these places where it's a huge problem. You know, the delivery, the reality doesn't meet the rhetoric. So there's a lot of discussion of, you know, the National Development Plan, housing for all, and details of what will be done. But people don't actually notice a substantive change on the ground. And that leads to this kind of sense that politics isn't delivering. Like one of the things that, you know, we've been talking a lot about Sinn Féin, the greatest danger to Sinn Féin's popularity is a term in government, because then they will be responsible for the expectations gap. And I think that's a problem that we see, not just in housing, but in a whole swathe of policy areas where the reality of delivery simply doesn't meet the needs on the ground, causing dissatisfaction amongst the voters.
Housing, obviously, Kate, is going to be most likely the defining issue coming into this throughout this whole term and coming into the next election.
Yeah, I think it's moved from a homelessness issue to being just a straight up housing issue. It's gone on too long. It's heading into the best part of people's lives are being spent renting. I, for one, employ, I think, about 35 people. For the first time in 16 years of business, I had a member of staff go homeless, which is a very difficult thing to happen in a business. And that's been obviously happening across the country. But for it to actually the reality of somebody to go into emergency accommodation, albeit rather temporarily, but actually homeless with a young child, and I have a child myself the same age. So I kind of go, it's gone past an ideology at this point. Something radical has to be done.
Was it ideological in your view? You were in Fine Gael when all these conversations, and when you were telling us it's not about ideology.
No, I don't think it's not fair to say that that Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil don't want to give people houses or anything like that, or moral hazard or any of these things, or if you work hard enough you'll get a house. I don't think that's a true reflection. But I do think perhaps there has been an underestimation of the impact of the lack of a house on a couple or on a family or on a single person or whatever your life plan is. And I think with COVID, it probably made that much more stark. It's much easier to isolate your children if they all have their own bedrooms. It's much easier to protect your family if you have a multi-generational living. It's much easier to protect your family if you're not living in a homeless hub. And there was huge challenges for women in particular, who we all know have, the stat lads will all know, have been disproportionately affected by the COVID pandemic. But, you know, having a garden, having your own front door and having a space in which you can protect yourself and your family was never as relevant as it was through COVID. And I think something radical has to be done. And that may need massive economic changes, such as, you know, companies that invest in houses and make huge profits from it, that those profits are, if they're not channeled back into housing, are taxed at a higher rate. Sounds very socialist from a Fine Gael member. But it's gone past a joke, because it's going to have lasting impacts now on the children, on that generation that have been brought up in that environment. And that doesn't make for a good society, because social cohesion is what has really kept us together for the last 2 years. As a country, and we have been quite proud, I suppose, in comparison to some other European countries.
Okay, we've a minute to go. If there was an election,
I think on these numbers, Sinn Féin would probably get about 50 seats, and then their big challenge would be where would they get the next 32 seats to form a government. It'll be a cold day in hell before Micheál Martin goes into coalition with Sinn Féin, and I can't see Fine Gael going into coalition with them either, and then it becomes very difficult to get to 82 and then to govern.
So you don't buy that idea that it's going to be a Sinn Féin government next?
I wouldn't be putting my mortgage on it, certainly not.
Would you, Kevin?
I think it is quite unpredictable what would happen in the next general election. I genuinely do, yeah.
Teresa?
Yeah, I share Gary's view very much. I think a lot of the parties will look over the border and say governing with Sinn Féin is a very bumpy ride indeed. And the queue to find partners to go into government, given that kind of the performance of Sinn Féin in government, but also what's happened to small political parties getting annihilated at the polls after an election, I think the queue could be a very short one indeed. And I'd be very careful before writing off Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. You know, they've been around for nearly 100 years. Parties like that don't disappear, you know, they endure. Okay. But the question is at what level?
Will we see you on the hustings in the next election, Kate?
Not sure. Definitely have unfinished business anyway, so we'll see.
I hope so. It would be good. Good to have you back.
Okay, that is all we have time for. We're on a short break while the Dáil is on its midterm break, so you'll hopefully join us when we return on Tuesday, the 2nd of November. I want to thank my excellent panel. I want to thank all of you for listening. Our producer this evening was Penny Hart. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The BCO is Elaine Conlon and Kieran Dunn was on sound. Up next is Fiacna O'Brien on with Late Date. But first we go over to Michael Corcoran on the Sports Desk.